And we're holding page 92 in Rav Basra, Ois Tes.
Ois what?
Tes. Continuing on the topic of tzedakah, the Gemara says, Amar Rav Asi, lo'olam al yimna odem es atzmoi, milosas shlishis ha-shekel v'shana. A person should never hold himself back from giving at least one-third of a shekel to tzedakah per year. In fact, the Rambam writes that if a person gives less than that amount, he's not mekayim the mitzvah of tzedakah. As we find in the pasuk, behem madnu aleinu mitzvahs. This is talking in the Sefer Nechemiah. They're talking about how everybody had agreed to sign on to what's called over there bris amona, a document saying that they pledge to be loyal to the Torah and mitzvahs. Because up until that point, people had been careless with the various mitzvahs, so they wrote out a document and had all the people sign it. So we established on ourselves mitzvahs, he writes over there, losses alone shlishas a shekel b'shana, that we should give one third of a shekel per year per person, la avoidas beis elokeinu, for the avoida of the house of Hashem. Now you have machzis a shekel usually, so what are we talking about, a third of a shekel? Marsha points out that for the machzis shekel is used to buy the korbanos of the Beis Hamikdash, and it's used for certain other ongoing expenses of the Beis Hamikdash. But you also have what's called bedek habayis. You have a fund for the upkeep and maintenance of the physical buildings of the Beis Hamikdash. And that's a different thing. So this shlishus shekel is talking about that aside from the machzis shekel per year for the korbanos, they were also going to give one third of a shekel, which would go to bedek habayis. Now that's similar to tzedakah in the sense that korbanos are what's called kedushas aguf. What you give to a korban or the machzis shekel that you give for it has intrinsic kedusha. Where tzedakah is not really. For example, let's say you said I'm going to give a dollar to tzedakah, and you set aside a particular dollar. You would be able to take that. You would be able to instead say, you know what, I'm going to use a different dollar for the same purpose. You're allowed to exchange it, so it doesn't have kedushas aguf. Bedek habayis is much the same thing. When you give something, when you donate something to bedek habayis, it doesn't have intrinsic kedusha. It has kedusha in the sense that it has monetary. The monetary value of it belongs to hektish, but they can swap it out to any as they see fit.
What's intrinsic mean?
Intrinsic means that it's built in. So therefore, that's why Rav Asi is comparing tzedakah specifically to the third of the shekel that they're giving for bedek habayis, for the upkeep of the Beis Hamikdash. There are Rishonim who learn, and there are Mefarshim on the Pasuk who learn, that all it means is, in Nehemiah's times, which is when this Pasuk is written, a third of a shekel was equal to what had been half a shekel in Moshe Rabbeinu's times, because they enlarged the value of the coinage, and so therefore now it's a third of a shekel in the current denomination. But still, the fact that the Pasuk calls it a third of a shekel, Rav Asi says you can learn from that, that's the minimum amount of tzedakah per year. Ion Yaakov points out a symbolism in it. We know that a person, there's three partners that go into creating a person, his two parents and Hashem. So therefore, every year, he should be giving one third of a shekel as, so to speak, a pidyon nefesh for himself, like to redeem his soul on at least an annual basis, because Hashem is constantly lending him and giving him life, and therefore he owes Hashem at least that minimum amount. Rav Asi also says, "Kshkula tzedakah k'neged kol ha-mitzvahs." Tzedakah is equal in value to all the mitzvahs. Shenemar, that same pasuk, they have manu aleinu mitzvahs segemer. They say we have established for ourselves mitzvahs in plural. Mitzvah in k'siv kan, it doesn't say mitzvah in the singular. Ella mitzvahs, but mitzvahs in the plural. So it's considered equal to all the mitzvahs. As a matter of fact, in the Yerushalmi. In the Yerushalmi, regularly when it uses the word mitzvah in the Yerushalmi, and also in some Midrashim from Eretz Yisrael, if not otherwise specified, it means tzedakah. Their term in Eretz Yisrael in those days for their term for tzedakah was mitzvah. Famously, the Alter Rebbe points out in Tanya that a reason behind it is because various mitzvahs you do with individual parts of your body. This mitzvah is with your brain, this mitzvah is with your mouth, this one is with your hands, etc. Whereas tzedakah is you're taking money that you put in your whole mitzvahs into making that money, and now you're giving it away to tzedakah, and therefore with tzedakah, you're accomplishing what a lot of regular mitzvahs would accomplish. Marsha points out another point as well. The Gemara says later on in this sugya that when a person does not want to give tzedakah, then it's considered like oved avodah zarah. And the idea is, again, when a person should know, when he's giving tzedakah, Hashem will pay back for him, but will pay back to him. If he refuses to give tzedakah, then he's pretending as though Hashem is not going to be able to pay him back. So it's like he's denying Hashem. Therefore, in that sense, tzedakah is equivalent to many mitzvahs. Omer Rabbi Elazar further on this topic, Rabbi Elazar says, Godol ha'maaseh yosim min ha'oseh. Somebody who makes other people give tzedakah, like we learned, for example, a couple of days ago, where Rava forced Rav Nosson Ba'ami to give a large donation to tzedakah because he knew that Rav Nosson is capable of giving it. So that would be an example of ma'aseh, somebody who makes other people give tzedakah, who convinces them, is greater yosim min ha'oseh, more even than the one who does the mitzvah himself. Shenema, as the pasuk says, "V'hoya ma'aseh tzedakah shalom." The act of tzedakah will bring peace, and we're downshining ma'aseh as meloshin ma'aseh, that he causes other people to do the mitzvah. Rashi points out, otherwise, why does it say ma'aseh at all? V'hoya tzedakah shalom. So therefore, it means that it brings about shalom. V'avoydas tzedakah, and the work of tzedakah. Hashket v'vetach ad olam will bring quiet and security forever. So we see that the mice at tzedakah gets shalom, which is a greater bracha. And then in Rashi over here in Yaakov, there's printed a parenthetical note from the Ritva that hashket v'vetach suggests something like a temporary rest. But shalom represents perfect good, and then the ad olam, now you're going to say ad olam in the second half of the pasuk seems to only refer to hashket v'vetach. However, the Ritva explains it refers to both. Shalom ad olam and hashket v'vetach ad olam. But hashket v'vetach just means like you have a break, you have a little bit of a break. You're not as bad off as you were before. As opposed to shalom means pure peace. And when that's ad olam, then that's a greater thing. And we see that the ma'aseh tzedakah, the ma'aseh hatzedakah, the one who causes the other people to give tzedakah has the greater bracha of shalom. Various mephoshim talk about why that should be so. One point is, Maal Shor actually explains differently. First of all, Rashi Maal Shor explains that when it comes to the giver, yeah, he has hashkif avetach. The ma'aseh was saying that he gets shalom, and again, shalom is greater. The idea of shalom, Marshall explains, is, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, otherwise the government goes and confiscates the money. In other words, when the Eibishter decides every year how much a person is going to make and how much he's going to spend, and if he doesn't spend it on tzedakah, he's going to wind up spending it on taxes and other things for the government. So now, the ma'aseh, so ma'aseh tzedakah, then Maal Shor explains, can mean somebody who, in fact, was forced to give tzedakah. So then, and we're calling it ma'aseh tzedakah, again, because we're crediting it to the ma'aseh, to the one who brought it. Avodas tzedakah, when a person himself gives without forcing, without having to be forced, then he has even greater hashkeit v'vetach. He has hashkeit, he has calmness that the government doesn't harass him, and he has bitachon, he has good bitachon that the Eidishter will pay him back. And therefore, in that sense, we can say that hashkeit v'vetach is greater than shalom, but again, shalom then would refer to ma'aseh tzedakah, the one who had to be made to give tzedakah, as opposed to avodas tzedakah where he did it voluntarily. There's a footnote over here that brings from Sefer Ikrim that the idea is when to give tzedakah, it causes shalom because parshat it makes. Like this, if the poor people have nothing, then they're going to be they're going to figure, well, we have to steal and we have to whatever in order to have food. So like this, giving tzedakah helps that. But then if you have in mind avodas tzedakah, it's not just you're doing it because of social reasons to prevent social unrest. You're doing it because the Eibishter said so. Then that brings about hashkit v'vetach ad olam, peace and tranquility for the neshama forever. So in that sense also, so that's another meaning of this pasuk. The Alter Rebbe has a letter in Igeres HaTshuva, in Igeres HaKodesh, I think it's number Yud Beis, where the Alter Rebbe analyzes this pasuk in yet another way. B'chol, a lot of the letters in Igeres HaKodesh are on matters of tzedakah. every year, ever since your Mendel Horodoka and the Chassidim moved to Eretz Yisrael and Tufel Flam and Zion, ever after that, the Rabbeim in the various parts of Russia, including the Alter Rebbe in his area, were responsible to collect money for them to support them, because they didn't have a way of supporting themselves in the economy of Eretz Yisrael at that time. In addition, there were also occasionally matters of pidyon shvuyim and other things, other types of gzeiros that they had to raise money for. So the Alter Rebbe was the main gabbai in his area, the main gabbai tzedakah for the whole litter. And therefore, after Rebbe's practice was every year he would write a letter talking about some aspect of tzedakah, pichsidus. Then at the end of it, he would say, "Now that you understand the greatness of tzedakah, now I'm sending this letter with ploiny and ploiny, and please give generously." So when the Alter Rebbe's sons put together the Geras HaKodesh and published it a year after the Alter Rebbe's Estalkus, they took off the ends of those letters, because those were only in the Geya B'Shas Naisa, and they kept in the Chassidish explanations, and that became the bulk of the Geras HaKodesh.
Which son of the Alter Rebbe were
involved? All three sons of the Alter Rebbe were involved. The Mitzvah Rebbe and Reb Chaim Avraham and Reb Moshe, all of them signed off on it. You have at the beginning of Tanya, you have Askama Sarabanim, and all three of them are signed.
So the sons?
I said sons, plural. Yeah. Anyway, the Alter Rebbe explains this pasuk as follows. Maisat Tzedakah means when a person has kind of the opposite of the way Maor Shor explains it over here. Maisat Tzedakah would mean somebody who has a natural tendency to give Tzedakah. So good, that brings shalom, it brings peace to his neshama, and so on and so forth. But then you have Vavoidas Tzedakah, means when he has to work on himself to force himself to give, even though he may not want to, or even though he figures he can't afford it or whatever. That brings about Hashgate, Vavetach Ad Olam, the Alter Rebbe explains, meaning in the words Hashgate, in the sense like you have a barrel of wine, and to begin with, after the wine has been pressed, it's full of dregs and stuff, all the stuff that makes it impure wine, and over time you leave the barrel there for a while, and eventually all that settles to the bottom. That's Hashgate Vavetach. That's hashket, shoket al shmorav. So therefore it means, in other words, when a person does that kind of tzedakah, he has to force himself, but he does it anyway, then that brings about a much greater bitter. It means that now he's like that barrel of wine where all the trash and everything sinks to the bottom, and he ends up with pure wine, he ends up with a pure neshama, which is hashket, and then vavetach, and he has more security for his neshama and for his connection with Allah, of course, ad olam. So the Gemara continues, Zocha, now when a person is giving tzedakah, one interesting point also about why the Ma'aseh is greater than the Oseh, the one who forces others to give tzedakah is greater than the one who gives. You have to ask him, and after all, the one who's giving is for giving, the one who's forcing him is not necessarily doing that himself. So yeah, there's an answer that Ma'aseh can also mean, for example, a person sets an example. He, for example, is a rich person who gives tzedakah, and thereby sets an example for others, we should do the same. But there's also an explanation from Rabbi Yaakov Emden that says, listen, you know, the one who's Ma'aseh that doesn't always have such an easy time of it. You're forcing me to give money for tzedakah. They're going to curse him. They're going to whatever. They're going to call him all kinds of names, and he perseveres and does it anyway. So therefore, he gets in a way a greater bracha even than the one who gives. So the Gemara says, Zocha. Now, when a person gives tzedakah, when a person has money that he has to spend, Zocha, if he's Zocha to give tzedakah, and either the way he's supposed to, it actually says he's Zocha to Mazel Tov, Halei Fores L'Roiv Lachmecha, then he has that now he'll be able to break his bread for the hungry. In other words, that he will tap to give tzedakah to those who need it and those who deserve it. Loi Zocha, if he's not Zocha, then Vaniyim Merudim Tovi Voyis. Then instead, what's going to have to happen, he's going to have to bring the Merudim poor into his house. What is Merudim? Rashi says it means the complainers. Rashi explains that it's related to a word in Tilim, Orid B'Sisi Vahima, which means that I moan and I complain. So Rashi says Vaniyim Merudim refers to the government. The government is constantly saying, we don't have enough, we're running deficits, we need money for this, that, and the other, and you got to pay. So in other words, the point is, if a person is not giving tzedakah to the poor people, he's going to wind up spending that money anyway. The government is going to come and say, we need more in taxation from you, and you owe the IRS more and whatever, and it's going to wind up going to them. So Maharsha gives another explanation as well, that the word merudim can also be related to the word roidim, as in the ones who rule by force. So it would refer to soldiers and then government officials who come in by force and demand that you give them money or else. So the same idea, in other words, a person is not Zoycha, then that's what he winds up with. He winds up having to give it to them instead of to the actual Aniyim. Maharsha mentions in this connection a story in the Medrash involving Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. The story is that Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai one time has a dream, one Rosh Hashanah. We're going to have this story later in the Gemara in our sugya involving Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai and his nephews. We'll learn the story over there in a few days, Bez Hashem. But to make a long story short, he had seen that Min HaShemayim, his nephews, are destined to lose a certain amount of money that year, so he made sure that they give as much as possible of that money to tzedakah. And at the end of the year, when there was a deficit that they hadn't quite given, they ended up getting arrested and they ended up having to buy their way out with that remaining money. The Medrash actually tells a very similar story, although with different amounts, and involving Rav Shimon ben Yochai and his nephews. Whatever the case, the point is, in other words, that there you also see, that it was destined, Min HaShemayim, that they're going to lose X amount that year. Had they been Zoicha, it would have all gone to the poor, like the sum of it had to go to what the Gemara is calling over here the Aniyim Merudim, the government who's complaining that we never have enough in taxes, or the soldiers who force their way in and take it from them by force. So the Gemara says in this connection, Amar lahu Rava l'bnei Mechuza. Rava said to the people of Mechuza. Mechuza was a town in Bavel. It was where Rava was born and grew up. His yeshiva was there later. We find in many places in Shas that they were very rich people there in Mechuza. So he tells them, Matursa minaychu. He says, I plead with you. Usu ahadadi. Compel one another to give tzedakah. He hated it to have a shlom of machosa. For that, you will have peaceful relations with the government. In other words, exactly that. We just said, Godel ma'asa yosem and oisa. You make somebody else give tzedakah, then you yourself are greater in a way even than the one who gives the tzedakah. So make sure, see to it, to each other, that you're all giving the proper amount of tzedakah, and you're rich. You should be giving larger amounts, and in that way, you'll have shalom. V'hoya ma'isa tzedakah shalom, and the government won't harass you for your riches and for whatever. It seems that Mechuza was actually, Mechuza has been identified actually as a city that was fairly near the capital of Bavel at that time, so they would have been very much in the government's crosshairs, and therefore Rava Mestama has extra reason to tell them, make sure that you keep the government off your backs. The way you'll do that is by making one another give lots of tzedakah. Even Yaakov brings the point over here, you know, that the Gemara elsewhere point brings from a pasuk, Adam lo omo yula, the person is born to toil. So either he's going to have to toil for the government, or if he's zoicha, he'll toil for Torah, and therefore Rav is telling them better you should do that, rather than it have to be the alternative. So the Gemara continues, V'omer Rav Elazar, Bizman shebes mikdash kayem, when the Bes Mikdash was standing, Adam noisen shikloi, a person would give his machza shekel, or miskaper loi, and that would be his kapara. Because again, that machza shekel is used to bring the korbanos sibur, which are a kapara for the whole Jewish people. For example, the Medrash says someplace that the korban tomid in the morning was machaper for any averis that a yid did the night before. And the evening or the night before. And the tomid shaban albayim was machaper for any averis that a person did during the day. So his machzah shekel helps contribute to that, and therefore that brings him a kapara. V'achshav she'ein beis mikdash kayem, nowadays that the beis mikdash is no longer standing, zocha, then, as we said before, if he's zoicha, aloi forest v'roi v'lachmecha, if he's zoicha, he'll give his bread to the poor, loy zocha, and if not, then the goyim will take it, or the girsa in the printed gemara is, im oisin tzedakah, if they do tzedakah, mutav, then good, then they have that schos, and that's their kapara, v'im lav, and if not, boim ovikachavim, v'notban oisa bizroya, then goyim come and take that money by force, again, because the Eivishta has determined that he's going to lose X amount during the year, and if he doesn't give it to tzedakah, then it winds up going to that. So like this, Maharsha points out, the poor people eating by his table or from the money that he gives them to buy food is the equivalent of korbanos on the Mizbeach. We find, for example, that it's the pasuk that we say by Mayim Achronim, by Dabra Elazar Shulchan Asher Lefnei Hashem, the beginning of that pasuk talks about the Mizbeach. So what is it, the Mizbeach or the Shulchan? So the Gemara elsewhere explains that that a person's table can be a kapara for him like the Mizbeach if he feeds poor people by it. Well, exactly that then. So if he's Zoicha, then he has kapara by that, and if not, then the goyim will come and take it by force. Shenemar, v'aniyim merudim tovi boy. As the pasuk says, you're going to wind up having to invite the aniyim merudim into your house. Again, we said merudim means the goyim one way or the other. Rashi had explained, merudim means the complainers, the government officials who are always complaining, we don't have enough. And Maharsha had said it means miloshin roidim, the ones who rule by force and violence. However, Ma'ukva says, nevertheless, that money that gets taken away by the goyim is nevertheless considered a form of tzedakah. Shenem of an exayich tzedakah. As in fact, the pasuk says, those who oppress you, tzedakah. So the simple meaning of the pasuk is that Hashem says that those who oppress you now, in the future, I will make that they're not going to anymore, and they will treat you in a way of tzedakah. But now we're understanding that it means that even now, v'negsayach, those who oppress you and force you to give money, tzedakah, nevertheless, to a certain extent, the Eibishter considers it like tzedakah. Why? Maharshal says a practical matter. Because what happens is, the government demands X amount of money, and they take it from the rich person, therefore they don't then go and also and demand that same amount from the poor. So in that case, indirectly, you've helped the poor people, but now they're not taxed as much.
Are they going to give the money to the poor? That's the question.
So that's the question, but nevertheless, the fact is, otherwise they would have gone to the poor person and say, you better give us X amount or we'll throw you in jail. And like this, they get from the rich person, and therefore that indirectly helps the poor people.
The poor never can afford it.
Yeah, that's the point, yeah. Okay. Nevertheless, though, the post can point out that doesn't mean, for example, that what a person pays in taxes can be deducted from his miser. You do have to figure out, now when you're calculating your income as far as miser and as far as tzedakah, you are allowed to say, you know, you do have to count only your net income. You don't have to count your gross before taxes. But nevertheless, you can't say that afterwards, if you ended up having to pay a penalty to the government or whatever it is, that you should count it towards your miser. That's not going to work. What our Gemara is saying, the Eibishter may consider it a tzedakah, but that doesn't exempt you from giving the proper amount. The Gemara continues. Omer Rav or Rava. The following statement about tzedakah was told me by Ula, who confused the ways of his mother. The Gemara will explain later why he's called that. Ula actually is also a bit of a derogatory term. Rashi explains in Russian, Ula, a baby. So like a baby or a child who confused or mixed up his mother's ways, as the Gemara will explain soon what happened. We find in Targum Onkelos, for example, whenever you have the Shurdish Homa in Tanakh, which means to confuse or whatever, like by Yoha Meis Machna Mitzrayim, or Asamahuma Basamigeres or whatever, it's always translated with the Shurdish Shin Gimel Shin. So it means like to be confused and mixed up and going crazy or whatever. So he caused his mother to act in that crazy, confused, mixed up way, as we'll say later. And therefore, Rava calls him by that nickname. Mishmei de Rabbalazar, he told him, who was that? We'll have the story soon in the Gemara. We'll see, there were two Chachamim involved, Rav Sheshes and Rav Achaboy Ba'ami. Rashi learns that the nickname, Ula Meshagash Ochsed Imei, is given to Rav Sheshes. Tosfos brings that maybe it was Rav Achaboy. So we'll get to the story and we'll see what happened. So this Chacham told me the following, Mishmei de Rabbalazar, in the name of Rabbalazar. My dichtiv vayuvash tzedakah kashiryon. The pasuk says he put on tzedakah like a coat of armor. In context, we're talking about the Eibishter, like putting on, so to speak, a suit of armor and getting ready to defend the Jewish people once and for all. But anyway, the question is, why is tzedakah compared to a suit of armor? Armor in those days was made, you'd have a beged with holes all over it, and then you would have individual scales of metal are sewn or somehow attached onto it so that they overlap and they provide protection against arrows and whatnot. So why is tzedakah compared to that? Loi Malach, it tells you, Mashuyan Zeko Klippo Klippa Mitzarefas Mashuyan Gadol, with a coat of armor like that, every individual scale adds up to a big coat of armor. Ask tzedakah called pruta or pruta mitzarefes l'cheshven gadol. The same way with tzedakah, every pruta adds up to a large amount. So in other words, the idea is, Marshall explains that tzedakah, putting it all together, is protective like a solid coat of armor. A lot of Mefoshim deal with the question, I mean, what's the Chiddush? Of course, every Pruta adds up to a large amount. What would we think otherwise? And what's the comparison to a, and what's the comparison to a coat of armor? The Rif points out a long point over here. Let's say, for example, you might have a poor person has almost enough money to get him some food, but he's missing just a little bit. You gave him that little bit. You gave him that last pruta. Now he's able to go buy himself a loaf of bread. So in that sense, it's like a coat of armor. If you have a coat of armor like that with scales, and you have one single scale is missing, the whole thing isn't useful because an arrow could get in through that one spot. So you have to have the whole thing complete. And the same way, the person who gave that last pruta, he's the one who makes it into a complete thing, and therefore he gets a great schar, and it's considered in a certain sense as though he gave the whole thing. Eitz Yosef brings up a point that it can mean, for example, that a person So a person, there can be two, the Gemara is going to give another meta, well, let's first learn the next piece of Gemara. Rav Chanina, Amar Mehacha, Rav Chanina says there's another source that tells us that each little bit of tzedakah adds up to a large amount. The pasuk says, "Uchveged idim kol tzidkei seinu." The Navi says, "All of our tzedakah is like a piece of clothing of idim." Rashi explains that idim means it comes idim ayin dalad yud mem. Rashi explains it comes from a word that means to remove. So like we're talking about a filthy piece of clothing, a filthy or worn out piece of clothing that a person would just take off him and throw it away. So our tzedakah is like that. In other words, we're not such tzedikim, or even our mitzvahs are tainted. Nevertheless, it's still compared to a garment, and therefore we can learn from that. My beged zeh kol nima v'nima mitzdarefes the beged gadol, with a piece of clothing, every thread adds up eventually to a large garment. Ach tzedakah kol pruta or pruta mitzdarefes the cheshbon gadol. So it is with tzedakah. Every pruta adds up to a large amount, and you have a complete thing. So Marashah explains, in other words, the idea is from Hashem's point of view, every little bit of tzedakah is so valuable, and therefore it's compared to what puts together a powerful coat of armor that protects the person against against all kinds of dangers. From our point of view, as the pasuk begins over there in Yeshaya, Vania Katome Kulanu, we ourselves consider ourselves as people who are tome and no goodniks, and therefore even our tzedakah is like a beged idim, like Rashi says, a worn out, cast off garment, and nevertheless still we're saying that the Eibishter appreciates even that flawed tzedakah, and it adds up to a large piece of clothing. So Eitz Yosef mentions a point over here that you can have a person who's giving tzedakah willingly versus unwillingly. If he's giving it willingly and he gives it in the right way, not to embarrass the poor person, then we're saying it saves him, it protects him like a coat of armor. On the other hand, if he gives it without, he's giving it without that, he's not doing it the right way, so it doesn't have that protective power, so it's a piece of clothing. So therefore, he has some kind of clothing, but it's really not what it should be, though.
So,
in other words, not so much kavana, but in other words, the point is there's a proper way to give tzedakah. Yeah, famously, for example, the Rambam has 8 levels of giving tzedakah. You should try to give it in a way that won't embarrass the poor person. Give it to him anonymously, if possible, b'chol. So when a person does that, then it's like shirian gadol. When not, then it's like beged idim. At least it's epis a garment. They talk about an interesting point that, like this, you have. There's a big question that a lot of Sfarim deal with. What's better when you have a large amount of tzedakah to give? To give it all at once or to give it piecemeal? So the Maharal, for example, talks on our Gemara. He says that from our Gemara, it seems that you should be giving it as much the large amount at once. We're saying, after all, it's tzarefes l'cheshbon gadol. The little amounts add up to a big amount, but wouldn't it be better to give the large amount in the first place? And Adarabba, you know, you can have it to call it a person has a greater battle with his Yetzer Hara that way. His Yetzer Hara is going to tell him, what, you're going to give $1,000 or whatever the amount is to tzedakah all at once? So that he conquers that is considered is a very great thing. Story, and there's a story in that connection actually with Rav Nachum Chernobler. One time, his family is badly in need of money, then a chassid comes and gives him 300 rubles, and shortly after that, a poor person comes and says he needs 300 rubles for his daughter's naden and wedding expenses and whatever, and Rav Nachum is first thinking of giving it to him, then he locks himself in his room a while and is thinking, and then after a while he calls in the guy and gives him the money, and he explained afterwards what happened was his first instinct was to give it all to the guy. The guy showed up punked at this time and needs the exact amount. Then he starts thinking to himself that maybe not, though. After all, maybe it would be better to split it among several people. Why give all the amount to one person? There's a lot of poor people out there. So he says, he finally figured out, he thought it over, he realized the first one comes is from the Yetzer Tov, the second idea comes from the Yetzer Hara, and he explains how he realized that, and then, therefore, once I know which is which, then it's clear I have to listen to the Yetzer Tov, and he called in the guy and gave him the whole thing. The Friedrich Rebbe once told this over, it's someplace in the Kotei Dvarim, and he says, you see from that, that's not, because a person has to, as Orum B'Yira, a person has to be very careful, and realize all the Yetzer Hara's tricks, and know how to, and know how to counteract them. So there is the idea that Maharal makes a point over here that maybe it would be better to give all the money at once. On the other hand, for example, the Rambam actually writes that no, Hakola for Yudroiv HaMaisa, it says in Pirkei Avos, everything is according to the greater number of the deed, and the Rambam explains in Pirkei HaMishnayos over there that what it actually means is it's better to give small amounts, but do it consistently over and over again, and that way a person breaks his Yetzirah again and again, and makes himself more and more of a Keli for Elikos. So which is it? So there's actually an interesting explanation that the two opinions in our Gemara over here, the two metaphors, correspond to those two possibilities. If you compare it to a coat of armor, then taka, if that lasts, you need the whole thing in order for it to mean something. Again, a partial coat of armor doesn't do any good at all. Therefore, that would be more like Maharal, give the larger amount at once. Mashenkin, if you compare it to a beged, a beged is woven bit by bit, and as much the larger it gets, the more it protects. So therefore, in other words, there's value in even part of it, and therefore that can, if it's compared to a beged, then you should do like the Rambam says and do it little by little in order to break your Yetzirah. The Alter Rebbe mentions that Rambam, by the way, in Igeres Kof Aleph, again one of the Igeres in Tanya, talking about giving tzedakah. And he makes the point that, yeah, in other words, you have to get yourself into the habit of being ready to give on a piecemeal basis, so that when the shliach comes to collect the money for Eretz Yisrael, you have all the money ready, but don't just set it aside. At the last moment, do it over the course of the year, and that way every time you're doing a ma'aseh tzedakah, you're breaking your Yetzirah more, like the Rambam says, and you're bringing in more kedusha into the world, etc., and then therefore that's the right way to do it. Okay. The Gemara says, Amai korolei ulam shagish och sidiv. Now, Rava has quoted this statement about the tzedakah being like a coat of armor or like a beged. He quoted it in the name of Ula Meshagash Ochsedime, the child who made his mother go in a weird, confused way. So what happened? Why is he called that? So the story is as follows. Debamine Rav Chadvoy Ba'ami Mirav Sheshes. Rav Chadvoy Ba'ami asked Rav Sheshes, Minayim Mitzorah b'nei Sfurai. How do we know Mitzorah during the 7 days of his counting? Now, you have like this. Mitzorah, there's a period of time when he's a Mitzorah Mukhlat. He's a confirmed Mitzorah. He has to be outside the city. He has to tear his clothes, v'chola. During that time, not only is he metame any person or any object that he touches, but even if he's under the same oil as another person, then he makes the other person tame, similar to a dead person in that regard. But now, eventually, he's healed of his tzaras, the kohen comes out, does the whole thing with the birds and the eitz erez and the water and everything that's described at the beginning of Parashas Metzora. Once he does that and he goes to the mikveh, now he begins a period of counting 7 days. During those days, he has a lesser degree of tumah. Eventually, after those 7 days, before those 7 days also, he shaves. At the end of those 7 days, he shaves, he goes to the mikveh again, and then on the 8th day, he brings his korbanos, and then he's done. So now, Rav Chadvoy wants to know, where is there a source in the Torah that a mitzvah be made sfurah during those 7 days of counting, shemetame odom, that he will still be metame a person that he touches? He won't be metame b'oil anymore, but he'll still be metame a person that he touches. How do we know? Amalei, so Rav Sheshet says, it's logical. Hoyle metame b'godim metame odom. We see that during those seven days, his clothing is tame, because the pasuk says at the end of the 7 days, the chibas begodav, he has to wash his clothing, meaning toivel at the mikveh. So if he's metame, even the clothing that he wears, how much more so a person that he touches? Amalei, but Rav Chadvoy says, that's not a proof. Duma tumah b'chiburim, shiny. You know what? It may be different, a tumah that you're connected to. A person is wearing his clothing, so it becomes like him. But other things that he touches, if the mitzvah during that time were to touch other clothing that he's not wearing, not necessarily would he be metame them. Or if he touches a person, not necessarily is he metame. Rashi points out, in fact, for example, you can have a case where a person carries or moves a nevela, then his clothing becomes tame as well. He and his clothing that he's wearing becomes tame, but only because the clothing is considered attached to him because it's on him. While he's touching the nevela, he touches another person, that other person's not going to become tame. He's not an avat tumah. So therefore you see that just because somebody is metame, the clothing that he's wearing doesn't mean that he's metame a person that he touches. And he says, it's a whole hesed nevela, the metame of God, the man, the metame of Adam. Exactly that. We see a person moves or carries a nevela. He's metame the clothes that he wears, but he's not metame a person that he touches. So it's not a proof. Omale. So Rav Sheshes answers back to him, the El Sheretz Matama Odom Menolon. Well, let's consider. A dead Sheretz is Matama, a person who touches it. Where would we know that from? Lav Meshum de Matama Godim. Isn't it because the Pasuk tells us that a person touches a Sheretz, then his clothes also become Tomei? And we know that a Sheretz is also Matama, a person who touches it. Why? Because those two things go together. When it's Matama Godim, it's also Matama, a person. Amalei, Rav Chabri says that doesn't mean anything. Sheretz behed yiksib ve'oyisha, she yuga b'chol sheretz. No, because by a sheretz, the Torah explicitly says that anybody who touches a sheretz becomes tamei. You don't need this kind of logic of metame begodim, metame adam. It's clear in the pasuk that it's that way. Fine. So Rav Shesha says, okay. How about, though, you could argue, how would we know that shichas zera is metame a person who touches it? Same thing. We find that a person who it comes out of, he himself becomes tame, and his clothing becomes tame. By the same logic, we would say that if it's metame, the clothing that he touches, also a person that he touches, even though it's not tumah b'chiburin. So you'd have a proof from there that the same thing as far as the mitzvah. Omalei, but Rav Chabri says, nah, come on, shichvaser inami behed yiksib boy. Because by shichvaser also, it clearly says, oi ish, the pasuk says, or a person, from whom shichvaser comes out, and that means, v'rabas esanagea, that comes to include not just the person himself that it came out of, but also anybody that anybody else who touches it. So fine, or the person himself, because the person himself that it came out of is an avatoma. But you can't prove anything from that, says Rav Chabri, about the Mitzora during the time of his counting, that he should be Matame, a person that he touches. You have no proof from any of these things. Now, what happened was, at this point, so Rav Sheshes gave up. And Ahadulei B'dichusa, at that point, Rav Chabri spoke to Rav Sheshes in like a joking manner, like he was very satisfied with the fact that he had stumped Rav Sheshes. The great Talmud Chacham, the great expert in the Shnayis and Braises. Rav Sheshes, yes. Rav Chabri was feeling good about himself, and he spoke to Rav Sheshes like in a joking way, like maybe he didn't blatantly say like "Hi, I beat you" or something like that, but he said something that implied like I won. Cholash Daite, Rav Sheshes felt bad, and when a Talmud Chacham like of the caliber of Rav Sheshes feels bad, it has terrible effects. Cholash Daite to Rav Sheshes. Rav Sheshes felt bad. Ishtik Rav Chabri Ba'ami, and the result was Rav Chabri Ba'ami, who had maybe unwittingly, but whatever, who had insulted him, became mute. It was almost like midah k'neged midah. He'd use his mouth to slog up Rav Sheshes and then to insult him for it, even if unknowingly, and therefore he became mute because of it. The Isyako Talmudeh, and it became very hard for him to learn. How's he going to learn if he can't speak? And how's he going to be able to remember, to even remember his learning?
He remained like that.
Well, wait. Asya ime v'kabachya kameh. His mother, Rav Chabri's mother, came and cried. Whose mother was it? Rashi explains that it was Rav Sheshes' mother who came to Rav Sheshes to plead that he should daven on behalf of Rav Chabri. One point is, the Gemara elsewhere says that when you have, let's say, Reuven was harmed or whatever by Shimon, and therefore Shimon is punished from Hashemayim, Reuven himself is not going to get to go to a high level in Gan Eden because through him Shimon was punished. So in the same way, Rav Sheshes' mother has reason to be concerned if because of my son Rav Sheshes, Rav Chabri was made mute and he's going to forget his learning, then it's going to bounce back on Rav Sheshes, it's going to have effects on him, loss of love. So therefore she didn't want that. So she came and cried to him. This is the point of Rashi. We'll talk soon what Tosfos said instead. So she came and was crying to Rav Sheshes that he should be moichor Rav Chabri. Savcha, she's crying out, v'loy ashkach ba. And Rav Sheshes didn't pay her any attention. He figured there's covered of a Talmud Chacham involved. It's not something that you can overlook so easily. Omrolei, now she did a very drastic thing, and this is why I was saying why Rav Sheshes, according to Rashi, is called the one who made his mother act in a crazy way. She says to him, Chozi lahani chagi demotzis minayu. Look at these breasts that you nursed from. So the pashtus, we would understand that she pashtus opened up her shirt and showed them. I don't know why, maybe we could understand that she just pointed to them over her dress, but maybe then the Gemara wouldn't call that Meshagash Ochsidime for that, but so apparently we have to assume that it means that literally she uncovered them. And she says, look at these breasts that you nursed from, and for that you should have Rachmanus and forgive him. One point is, you know, we had in last week's parasha, for example, when Moshe wouldn't nurse from the Egyptian women, because in general it says in Shulchan Aruch, you shouldn't have a Jewish child nurse from a goyish woman, if you can help it, because her tumah goes through the milk to the baby in the same way. Like she's saying, you know, if you act in such an achzoriistic way, it's gonna reflect badly on me. People are gonna think his mother must have raised him like that. What? That's all. Yeah, that's it. Bar Rachmi Ale. So fine. At that point, Rav Sheshes was swayed by that argument. He davened for Rav Chabri the Itzi, and he was healed. But nevertheless, Rav Sheshes gained the nickname Ula Meshagash Ochsid Imei because he caused his mother to act in this crazy way to uncover herself in front of him. Now, one point is, we do find in a number of places in Shas that Avshashus was blind, so it may not have been as bad as all that. On the other hand, there is evidence that Avshashus was not always blind throughout his lifetime, and in fact, there's a tshuva from one of the Goyim that explicitly says that Avshashus tried to be noyig in a certain midas chassidus of not looking up from the ground, and eventually that caused him to become blind. So in that case, maybe he was still sighted when this happened. We have no way of knowing. Anyway, this is all points of Rashi. Tosfos brings from Rabbeinu Chananel that actually the Ulam Meshagish Ochsid Ime is not Rav Sheshes but Rav Achadboy, and that it's his mother who came to Rav Sheshes to plead for her son. In that case, what does she mean when she said to Rav Sheshes that you nursed for me? Back when Rav Sheshes was a baby, she had been his wet nurse. His mother, Rav Sheshes' mother, for whatever reason, hadn't nursed him, and Rav Achadboy's mother was the one who had. So now she's coming to plead for her son, that he should have Rachmanis on her, and daven, and that he should have Rachmanis on him, and daven for him, but still, it's a crazy thing for her to do. So now we can blame it in a way on Rav Achadboy. If he hadn't been disrespectful to Rav Sheshes, then his mother wouldn't have had to put herself in such a situation. So according to that, the nickname Ula Meshagash Oruch Sidime refers to Rav Achadboy.
He must have probably bet Mechil
at lower. At that point, I guess I'm sure he bet Mechil also, but yes. Once he was able to speak again, and anyway, again. The Gemara, by the way, digresses at this point to talk about, you know, the fact is, Rav Achadboy asked a good question. What is the source for it? And then the Gemara goes into a discussion, la halacha, of actually how we know the din, given that Rav Sheshes was not able, after all, to find a source for it. So the Gemara works to find a source for it, after all, and to answer Rav Achadboy's question.
Says something bad, and it happens to the person. So you're saying, in every case, they're
not necessarily taken away, but at least they don't get to a certain higher level than Olam Haba than they might have because of that. Yeah, that's the Gemara. That's the Gemara in Shabbos. Yeah, it doesn't say, but the Gemara says it in Shabbos, so that's good enough for us. Yeah. Okay. Yom Yom Mashiach Golach of Hey Tavis. So the Rebbe talks about Nasicha, that our generation is the last generation of Golos and the first generation of Gola. Therefore, we have a special emphasis on our Avodah, that we have to be Mashpia on the Umas Ha'olam in all matters of good and righteousness and justice. Meaning, you know, they have to keep the Shevet Mitzvah Noyach. And that will bring more quickly, as the Pasuk says, that Hashem will give all the nations a pure speech, but they'll all serve Hashem as one unit, shoulder to shoulder, and as the Rambam puts it, that the whole occupation of the world will be only to know Hashem, as the Rambam finishes off his Sefer, and therefore it's our job nowadays to work on being toil on them about Shev Mitzvah Shmini Noyach in order to bring that time closer. We actually have in our Gemara soon, we're going to have a piece that relates to this also, where the Gemara talks about Tzedakah v'chesed sh'umas ha'olam osim. So that's going to also relate to this point as well.
Moment of silence.
Yeah, moment of silence as well, yeah. Okay. Continuing with halachas of Netilas Yadayim in the morning. So again, we talked about that if a person gets up in the middle of the night and he washes, then when it comes, when dawn comes, he should wash again, because again, maybe the nighttime is what makes the ruach ra. And then we talked about, but on the other hand, a person is only a beri chadasha once a day. So now, in a similar vein, if a person sleeps during the day 60 breaths, which again, we talked about before, what 60 breaths is, the general understanding is that among many poskim, that's a half hour, then it's good for him to wash his hands 3 times when he wakes up, because again, maybe it's the sleep that we don't know whether it's the night or the sleep that causes the ruach ra, it might be the sleep, and therefore he needs to wash. Therefore, he needs to wash for that as well.
By the bed?
Not necessarily by the bed. I don't know, but at least that he should wash. That he should wash like negavaser in the morning when he wakes up from a nap in the middle of the day. So fine, yeah, the Eshel Avraham mentions here in a footnote that the Eshel Avraham says you don't need necessarily, you can walk 4 amos without that washing. It doesn't need to be next to your bed, but at least you should wash. There's a story. What?
You go to the sink.
Yeah, you go over to the sink and you wash it. There's a story involving the Alter Rebbe and a Chosid. I think it was a Hillel Paratcher, but I don't remember, something along those lines where he had slept a nap and not washed his hands. And the Alter Rebbe felt there's a ruach hatuma over there and wouldn't speak Chosidus. I don't remember the Prote, but the Maisa. Maybe somebody else remembers them better. But something along those lines, we see from that a person should wash even after a nap in the daytime. Again, as long as it's shittin nishni, as long as it's 30 minutes or more. In this connection, though, the Altadera mentions that Dovra Melech Olav HaShodan would be careful, even during the night, not to sleep for shit in Nishmi at a time, because he never wanted to. He would wake up within every half hour, so he didn't want to taste the taste of death, because the Gemara tells us that sleep is 1/60th of death. So until midnight, he would take short naps, each time less than half an hour, until Chatzos HaLaila. Chatzos, he would get up, he would strengthen himself like a lion, and get up and loon Torah the whole night. Famously, the Gemara tells us in Brachas that he had his harp arranged over his bed in such a way that it would wake him up. So in other words, the idea, you know, you have also, the Altadera doesn't mention over here, but you do have in Pirkei Avos, where it says, you know, Shena Shel Shachris, that sleeping in the daytime is not necessarily such a good thing. Fine. Um, I'm coming out of my